don't be discouraged and don't go down a path of what will make money. Start with what lights you up and find a way. Does that overlap with what people are willing to pay for? And I bet you it is. That's what I'm excited about helping people do, because I don't want to build a successful business. I want to build a successful life. And the business is just one part of that. So if I'm not enjoying myself, what am I doing?
Hi, I'm Brooke Raybould. I'm a high-achieving mama with a Georgetown MBA who said no to the corporate world and yes to herself. Trained by two of the top business schools in the country, I fell in love with entrepreneurship and embarked on the biggest startup of my life, my family. Drowning in diapers and laundry, I bootstrapped my way to building a six-figure online business where I was paid to be myself. And now, I'm on a mission to help women ditch the mom memes and build the life they were created for. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom looking to optimize your routines and carve out a little something for yourself, or the savvy woman wanting to do it all, I will break down the systems and strategies that help busy moms get big results. Step on into my stay-at-home office and welcome to the At Home Startup Podcast. Many of you who are listening to this podcast probably know my story. I felt so strongly about women being able to have the same opportunity that I have, that I get to be home with my kids. I get to create a startup just by being their mother. And on the flip side, I also get to tap into this stimulation of entrepreneurship and business that I love. But how does that happen? Today's guest, Graham Cochran, is going to break down exactly how you start an online business from home. He is the author of How to Get Paid for What You Know, Turning Your Knowledge, Passion, and Experience into an Online Income Stream in Your Spare Time. My dad had sent me an article that he wrote for CNBC titled, I Work 5 Hours a Week, a 39-year-old who makes $160,000 a month in passive income, shares his best business advice. And I said, I have to get him onto my podcast. But Graham's journey wasn't all roses. He was laid off from his job. He had just brought a child into the world, and he didn't know what to do with his life. He had had a music background, and he had YouTube at his fingertips, so he started creating content. From there, after 18 months, Graham's business went from $500 per month to $5,000 per month. And as I mentioned in this article, it's now at $160,000 a month. But as you'll see on this episode, it doesn't have to be complicated. So on this episode, we are going to break down all of the topics that go along with starting an online business. And it starts with simplification. Graham is going to talk about how to discover your hidden talent that people are willing to pay you for, and then how to turn that into an income stream that you can monetize monthly, sometimes with your eyes closed, which is crazy. But again, this goes back to something as simple as teaching others about your own knowledge, your own passion, and your own experience, bringing it to life through content creation, and then creating an offer for your audience. So many good topics in this episode. Graham is a true entrepreneur at heart, and he has many frameworks that will help you start along this journey. So welcome, Graham Cochran, to the At Home Startup Podcast. Graham, thank you so much for joining the At Home Startup Podcast today. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Brooke. I'm excited.
So my dad, who I want to say is like a pioneer entrepreneur, real estate developer, you know, in that, you know, generation where entrepreneurship wasn't necessarily as commonly talked about as it is today. So he's always trying to understand what I do in the realms of content creation. And so he sent me an article that you had written the other day in CNBC titled, I Work 5 Hours a Week, a 39-year-old who makes $160,000 a month in passive income shares his best business advice. And I know, you know, when you share something, as we all do, it's a reflection of you usually. And my dad, being someone who's so into entrepreneurship, wanting to connect with me, shared the article you had written. And he, you know, I felt it that he was trying to understand what I did as a content creator, being like, is this what you do? And if this is what you do, this is super legit and you've taken it to the next level. So can we dive into, you know, break down what was talked about in that CNBC article?
Yeah. Well, first of all, so that's how we got connected, is your dad with that article?
Yes. I think he said you should get him on your podcast, or maybe it was me being like, I have to get him on. And then sure enough, I called him. I'm like, Graham is coming on my podcast and I'm so excited to talk with him.
Oh, well, he sounds like a really cool dude. That's super awesome that you have a dad like that who was entrepreneurial. I mean, I kind of wish, I love my dad, but both of my parents had normal jobs. So I wasn't exposed to this kind of stuff at all until my mid to late 20s. So I'm like, man, I wish I would have grown up in that home. But that's really cool. That's a fun connection. Thanks for sharing that. And hopefully you felt validated. You're like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, Dad. Like, forget Graham. This is what I do, you know?
Yeah, I'm like, the online world, it's not, because in the beginning, I'm sure you can relate. You're like, is this real? You know, you earn that first, you know, source of income stream. And you're like, is this for real? I'm just doing what I love. And I know you talk about you recently wrote a book called How to Get Paid for What You Know, turning your knowledge, passion, and experience into an online income stream in your spare time. And that's exactly what it feels like, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the greatest time to be alive, because there's people like me who I don't think I would have considered myself entrepreneurial. When I look at the entrepreneurs that I think of, when I think of business, I think of the Steve Jobs and I think of the Elon Musks, these risk takers who just have these crazy ideas and they're just willing to do whatever. And I felt like that wasn't me, right? Very fearful. I like security, dependable income. It took the Great Recession in 2008, 2009 for my whole world to get turned upside down and for me to jump into entrepreneurship. I was kind of pushed. I say like God kind of pushed me over the ledge into it, and I wouldn't have jumped on my own. But looking back now, like, I'm so glad I did, but I was desperate, right? I talk about this a little bit in the book, and I try to share my story when I can. But again, I had no idea what to do. So it was losing two jobs in 2009. After moving to Florida with some friends to help start a church. And so I didn't know anybody. We just moved, just bought our first house, just had our first baby. I'm 26 years old. And then I lose my second job that year. Company ran out of money. It was a crazy time back then, as it kind of is right now. A lot of people are unsure what's going to happen. And so that's what happened to me. And so I had to find a way to make a living. We were on food stamps for 18 months during that period. And I was starting a blog and I was starting a YouTube channel. I don't even know why I was. I was originally thinking I would get some leads for a service that I provided as a musician. I would record albums for bands and produce music. So I had a little bit of a freelance background, but it was just like side extra money. So I thought maybe I'll go full-time freelance. And I thought that's what creating content was going to do, was get me some freelance clients. And I had no idea of this world of content, courses, memberships, that people actually didn't want to hire me. They wanted to learn what I knew in my head and be able to do it themselves. And that's what I talk about in the book. And that's what I'm teaching people, is like, I am one of millions and millions of people who have figured out, oh, the value I can offer the world isn't maybe me doing a service as much as it's me teaching what I know so that others can go do it for themselves. And there's so much opportunity to do that right now.
That's so interesting. Can you take us to like the pivotal moment in your journey where you, I guess, realized what your expertise was and like how you then, I don't like the word capitalized, because as you mentioned, like, entrepreneurs are always others focused. I got that from your website. We're always there to serve people. But like, where did you realize, you know, I can serve people in this way? And then what was that like juncture there for you that turned it into an actual business?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I do think all entrepreneurship is serving other people by creating great products or services that make their life better. And that's what's so great about capitalism as a model, is it only works if you're serving people well. There's ways to make money in a shady way. And as you see every story, it eventually gets exposed and it doesn't last. But the long lasting companies are the ones that are making the products and the services that people want. And it's letting people vote with their dollars. And if nobody wants it, you're going to go out of business. So you have to be others focused. And that might mean shifting. Like we've all have had to pivot. I know you've probably had to tweak and pivot. Like it never stays the same, but it's always others focused. So for me, not even knowing what I was doing, not even knowing what I was doing was a business model. All I did know was that I was putting out some content like you with your blog. I was blogging and I was making YouTube videos. I only started YouTube because to show what I'm doing in the recording studio, I needed to film some things. And I also wanted to do some screen capture on the software we were using. And so the medium made sense for what I wanted to teach. But I was seeing that it was helping people. And you don't have to have a big audience to know that it's making an impact. And you've probably seen this too, Brooke, where the people reading and responding to your stuff are like, oh my gosh, this was so helpful. Or the way you explain that, or just your vulnerability about this, or you sharing about this, like they feel a connection to you and they feel grateful that you exist. There was no money being exchanged, but I could sense this is something. And that's one reason why I kept going. Like, you know, my wife supported it because she saw that even though I wasn't making any money off of it, she was like, there's something here. These people love what you're doing. And so that was really the catalyst for, okay, I don't want to stop doing this because I'm going to have to and go get a job if I can't make money off of it. I would love to keep this up because it's helping people. Could I monetize it a little bit so that I can justify the hours I'm spending filming and writing? And that was all I was trying to do. I thought my goal was to make $2,000 a month. If I could monetize off of my site and make $2,000 a month, that'd be worth, you know, the 10, 20 hours a week I was putting into it is what I thought. And so I started with, you know, running banner ads and contacting brands that I thought would want to be in front of my audience. And what I knew was music recording. I went to school for audio engineering, producing music is for bands. And so I knew the pain points people had. I knew that there was a world happening where like technology was getting super cheap. So just like with cameras getting really affordable, anybody could get their hands on really quality audio equipment and have a little home studio. And they didn't have to go to a recording studio. So that was a shift in the industry, but then there was a gap in knowledge. I don't know how to use the equipment. That's where I was coming in saying, hey, well, here's what to buy. You don't need to spend much money. Here's how to make your music sound good. And I was like the connecting point for people between this desire to make a music at home and then not having a degree. And it's all kind of garbly gook, like the way they explain things in audio school anyway. So I try to make it layman's terms. And it was just a game of like, well, how could I monetize this best? I thought the only way to monetize it was ads. I had no idea. And I tested this of like, well, people like the YouTube videos. If I wanted to teach them something really in depth, it would take me like 3 or 4 hours to really teach this thing. I can't put that all on YouTube because they were literally capping my videos at 15 minutes in length back then. I was like, what if I could just film this whole thing, zip up the videos and sell them? Could I sell the videos for like $45? Would somebody buy them like hours of video content? And it was just a guess. I mean, there's people that teach this now. I'm one of those, but I didn't even know that was called a course. But it was just, would people pay for these videos? And so put it up on PayPal. One guy bought it for $45. Then another person bought it for $45. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm making money off of something digital that does, you know, light bulb. So like, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I'm smart enough to know like I could do more of this. What if I had more courses? What if I had more people to sell to? What if I sold them at higher price points? Like that's when I decided to go all in on selling video content. It was one step at a time, but it really just evolved from there and took off.
That's so interesting to me. Now I have so many follow-up questions on this. I get curious about this personally, so I know others probably do as well. Traffic and getting those customers. I mean, I have so many questions, but I think that's a big piece of this puzzle. Do you have a strategy for reaching people outside of your immediate audience? Maybe someone is starting and they don't have an audience. Is your strategy put in the time to create content because that's what will organically magnetize people to you? Or is it, you know, a paid traffic strategy, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, great question. So I don't do any paid traffic, never have, probably never will. And there's a lot of reasons why, but it's all organic, which is great because then what I make is pretty much what I get to keep, right? Because there's a lot of people who can, I know a lot of people who make a lot on their launches and they don't tell you how much they spend to get that money on their launches. So the profit is not nearly what it seems. But I love organic traffic for a lot of reasons we could get into. But yes, the biggest asset I have is my audience. And so as many things as I could eliminate from my business or automate or delegate, the one thing I will that I have to continue to do, like what the article I talk about, like 5 hours a week, that's all I need to put into my business. And what is that? It's pretty much the content side of things, me making new content for YouTube and me interacting with people in my content or in my paid community. That's about it. Because content is what drives everything. So it's very slow at first. That's why people, I think, run to ads because it seems like the faster way to get leads. But if you would plant the seeds in the ground of really good content on a search engine based platform like YouTube, which I'm a huge fan of, because again, it's not like social, which is good for different things, but you know, Instagram, a video, you do a great video and it disappears unless it goes viral. And if on YouTube you do a video, it does not disappear. It's tied to search and it's tied to keywords and it's tied to recommendations from other videos. Your videos will serve you for years and years to come. So I get leads off of videos that are 7, 8, 9, 10 years old to this day, still sending me leads, and they're all highly targeted. They like that video. They're going to love everything else I have. And so talk about a multiplicative effect of being efficient with your time. You know, I only do but so much, because if I found this is the 80-20, this is the 20% that will drive everything, is me committing to weekly YouTube content. So the answer is twofold. If you have no audience when you're starting, then it's hard to make money right away. So you have to have a long view and be willing to play the long game. But in the short term, the things you can do, one-on-one coaching or consulting is probably the fastest, best thing you could do. Plus it's paid research to figure out who these people are that you're trying to help. And so you don't have to have a website or a product or anything. Just get on social and then share what you want to help people do and help them achieve. And if they want help one-on-one, they can message you and you can just qualify a few people and make up some package and make up a price, but just start getting on Zoom calls with people and helping them get real results or coaching them. And then you're figuring out what your content should be for the masses and what your products could be. But long term, the best thing you could do is own your own audience, create content that's discoverable on a search engine, and start to build an email list and figure out what these people need, and then go build those products for them. It's slow, but it's dependable and it's scalable. And that's the only way I've been able to like reduce my work hours from 32 hours a week down to 5 over the years and scale the income.
I completely agree with this. And I think that when you're creating content too, especially as an entrepreneur, I learned this in the courses, is that sometimes you have to figure out, like, I think it's twofold. It's, you know, what you want to do. Actually, they don't talk about that in entrepreneurship class. It's more, where's the pain point of your audience? Maybe you figure out the pain point as you're creating content, but maybe you realize you don't want it. This actually isn't the thing that lights you up. And I feel like content creation is such a good and natural, you know, gateway into entrepreneurship, because it goes, do you really like talking about this? Like, what is the thing that you enjoy talking about? What is that thing that you're gifted with, that talent that you can bring to life? And when you're talking about it, you can just roll off the cuff. I think people make it content creation so complicated and they think they have to be, you know, I had heard something I think Amy Porterfield says is like, you just need to be a couple steps ahead of your target audience. And back to what you said about kind of creating these courses that were more in layman's terms, it's like people aren't looking for these sophisticated experts to tell them, you know, how to raise your kids because I'm a PhD. It's like, what about the mom that's pushing her kids in the stroller to the park that has a couple kids that she's, you know, a few years ahead of you? Those, you know, are the magnetic marketing. And I think, like you said, is it's such a great time to be born, because you can just have these natural, you know, gifts, your life experience that you can bring to life and start monetizing it.
Oh, yeah. Think about this. All your content should really do, if you're, let's say if you're educating people, which is a lot of what I've if you have something you could share that would be helpful to teach, simplify something for somebody. Complexity is usually a self-serving, narcissistic, like, I want to look like I have it together, so I need to sound smart. That's really when it's you being focused on you. If you really want to serve people, stop thinking about yourself, think about them and what do they want? Simple. If you can be the person in your niche that simplifies it better than anybody else, encourages people in every piece of content. So they walk away feeling encouraged, like, because everyone's drowning in discouragement and despair. And if your video or your blog or your podcast can be like a balm of encouragement in a sea of nastiness and just anger, they'll just have a really good experience with your brand. So encourage them and then empower them, right? Good teaching isn't just teaching them what to do. It's teaching them in such a way that they leave feeling like they could do it themselves. Like, wow, I could actually do this. And that's empowering people. That's a whole different level of education, but it's fun. And that's what I try to do in every single video, is simplify, encourage people, and empower people. And I assume this might be the only piece of content of mine they ever interact with. And so I want to make sure that they get that when they leave. And then you mentioned something that's so important, which is, this is why I love organic content over ads. If you run a business on ads, even if it works, you're missing out on so many of the benefits of content. And you mentioned one of them, which is you get to learn what people really want and what they need and what you like to talk about. And you get to figure out your own frameworks and your own methodologies. Like, you're not born knowing these things. Even if you intuitively know how to do something, every framework I've ever created that has a name that sounds cool and put together, it came from like trying to teach it to somebody and realizing, oh, there's actually five steps and these things actually connect. And like, you have to put content out there in the world to learn it yourself or to refine your own thoughts. So you're figuring out your own thoughts, which is cool. You're figuring out what your people need more and more. Every year I'm learning more about my audience than I knew the year before. And then here's the third one. You are building so much authority and credibility in the space by sheer volume of you having content out there. You may not be the smartest person in your niche or the best connected, but if you have the most content that people just love by virtue of you showing up every time they search on YouTube or Google, like, and they see you or see your brand, all of a sudden they think you're legit. And I had friends for years in my first businesses in the music recording space. Like I said, people would say, Graham, I can't search any of these topics around music recording and not see your face. Like, it's popping up everywhere. And my friends were so irritated with me, but it made me look like the authority in the space when I was just a guy in my spare bedroom on food stamps trying to figure out a way to take care of my family. And it's powerful because then you get opportunity for press or media or events, or because they just see you. And ads can only do that to a certain degree as long as you're putting money in it. And people don't always trust ads, but if they see you organically showing up, you must be the authority in this space. And so I say, get to planting those content seeds now and let it all accumulate for you and help you out.
I love that. Let's move on to platforms for launching a digital product. Can you break down what your system is and maybe what you would recommend for someone getting started?
Absolutely. So on the concept side and then the tool side. So on the concept, here's how my business works. And I try to teach this as often as I can on the front end so people understand the model, to see if they even want to dive in and join any of my paid stuff. I want them to see it all and go, okay, that makes sense. I like that, or I don't like that. Here's my model. It's very simple, right? Free content. And I like YouTube, podcast, blog. I've done it all, but free content where people discover me. I need help learning how to X, and then a video of mine pops up. Oh, let's check this out. If they like that video, then I offer them, you mentioned it, a lead magnet, which is, again, it's just more content, but it's going to be like a no-brainer if they're enjoying that video. And I like PDFs. They work well. It could be a cheat sheet or a checklist. It could be a video training, you know, something more that they have to enter their email address for. But if they like the free stuff, they're going to like this extra free thing, and they're going to really, really want it. Not overwhelming, not a whole course, just something like a little nugget. They're like, oh, I need that. Again, checklists or cheat sheets work great. Now they're on your email list. So that's component one, is the content. Component two is the lead magnet. Component three is the follow-up emails. We call this a funnel or an autoresponder or an email sequence. It's all the same thing. And it's just pre-written emails that deliver the free thing, welcome them, add more value, maybe teach them something else. You're still kind of establishing authority a little bit in the space in a non-braggadocious way. Here's kind of why have me as a teacher. Why should you even listen to me? And then that leads to the fourth component, which is offering a digital product. That could be anything. I like online courses that are videos. I like paid communities and memberships. I've got like masterminds, coaching groups, things like that. But a course works great, even if it's a mini course, even if it's a $45 course, because it's digital. And so all four of those things work together. They find you on content, They join your list through that lead magnet. They get follow-up emails. And then within a day or two or three, they're being offered a digital course they could buy. And you're not involved in any one of those things because you set them all up. And this is, again, is how I work so few hours a week. You do the work once and then it works for you. And then what I use for all of that these days is Kajabi. There's a lot of tools now, which is great. Because again, when I started in 2009, you had to have a WordPress blog and you had these plugins and then this thing duct taped to that thing. And like Kajabi changed the game. I've been on Kajabi since 2013, but they changed the game in 2015 when they sort of beta launched this all-in-one platform. And now it's been copied and there's a lot of other software platforms that are doing similar things. So any one of them will work, but I love Kajabi because it'll be your website. You don't have to pay for hosting. It'll be your email capture. It'll be your digital product delivery. It'll be your funnels. It'll be, you can host webinars on it. You can just keep track of all your customers. It has paid communities you can manage inside of it. It's one login for me. I've moved everything over to it for both of my businesses because it's just simplified my life. But it's a great starting point for people to have their entire online brand in one place. It can be simple if you have a very simple business, or it can be very complex with automations and all kinds of things if you really want to have a very, very complex business.
What length of course have you found to be the most successful? Do you think that with people's attention spans nowadays, that they are looking for a more targeted, you know, mini series that maybe has multiple or covering everything? Do you have any thoughts on that? I'd like to talk about length and then also price point.
Yeah. So you got to think about your needs as the business and then their needs as the user. So let's be selfish first for a minute. Your needs as a business to make a lot of money, you need to think like as a whole product suite, right? It's not going to really be one product that gets it done. You might have a bestseller, but generally, right, it's the accumulation of like all these great offers that work together. And so someone could look at how much money someone makes in a month or a year and go, wow, that's impressive. But it's really just multiple, you know, blocks stacked on top of each other that makes the structure. And so you want to think of eventually, not all at once, but eventually you want multiple types of products that really work well together because you're creating like a product journey for the user. So let's say like a mini course, this could be a $45 mini course or $50 mini course that might teach them one thing and it might be an hour or 2 hours of content. If they loved that thing, let's say I'm teaching like fashion design, helping men like dress well, let's say. And maybe I have like a mini course on how to like figure out your clothing colors. Like here's how to know exactly what colors to buy and stay away from based off of these things. If they like that, they're probably going to want more. Oh, I have a lot of other questions beyond just the colors I should wear. Like how do I know like what should be in my wardrobe and like what brands should I buy and what should I wear to these types of events? What should business casual look like versus this? And so it would make sense to offer people who like that mini course a bigger course that covers like way more in-depth stuff on how to dress well. And then I'm sure it would be smart to have like a community for those men to join to then not just have content, but be able to ask all these random follow-up questions and get coaching and say like, can I submit my outfits to you? And you as the coach can tell me what I should be wearing, like having that kind of proximity in a paid community. And then I'm sure like the super, super fans would love to pay a premium to get in a really small group with me as the stylist coach where I know their names and we meet regularly and I'm like shopping for them or I have my team shop. I mean, you can imagine, right, how we're taking it from a little teeny thing up to a really expensive thing. And then the number of people that would buy that expensive thing gets fewer and fewer and fewer. But it's really a whole suite of products that not only are at different price points, but they serve different, you know, roles. So like in my business right now, I have like a course that teaches you how to launch your business. And my book teaches this too. That's like the most affordable thing I offer, but like launch that business, right? But then once you've launched it, well, I'm not making as much money as I would like. And I have so many other questions. Should I do what Russell Brunson's doing over here? Amy Porterfield said this, what about this? And so I have a paid community for people who want to scale to six figures and beyond. And we have a community and I do live coaching and then I have ongoing trainings for these ongoing questions they have. And that's a great thing to graduate into if you've already launched. And then I've had a mastermind of like, if you're already doing six figures and you want to scale to seven figures a year, you're going to have different questions and have different problems. And you want to be in a smaller group of people. So I take 12 people. We meet every week. And like, so that's another level of thing for that type of person. So maybe you think about of what you'll eventually want to have as a business. And then from the user's perspective, yeah, not everyone's going to want to jump right into something like that. So you start with what maybe the most common pain point is and start with a little mini course and get them a result quickly. Mini courses are great because it's people are busy, to your point. I have a lot of people who try to shove so much content into their courses because they're afraid. This is a fear-based move. I'm afraid that they're going to buy it and think it's not valuable. And we all do it. And so we've all been there. I'm still there. I'm 14 years into doing online business. I'm still insecure. And so it's like, if we can get out of that mode and say, okay, what do they really want? Well, they want results as fast as possible. Don't we all? So why would I make them watch a 10-hour course when I could give them a 1-hour course if it could get them the same results? Like, could I get rid of all the bloat and all the fluff and have it more action-oriented? If that got them results faster, wouldn't they be happier for that? Wouldn't they pay the same amount to get the results faster? Some people would pay more to get results faster. They don't want gobs of content. That's just a means to an end. So whenever we can keep that in mind, it helps us realize, okay, less is a lot of times more, but just put yourself in their shoes. What would you want? And what are you ultimately after? And can you just craft that? And you may not knock it out of the park with your first course. My first course was pretty bad, but it got the job done. Again, going back to your content, I love creating organic content because you're testing out frameworks and ideas and figuring out what people like, and then you can translate that into a paid product.
If someone approached you and said, if you implement this system every morning, I will guarantee that you will have an amazing day, would you do it? I'm sure in your head, you're probably thinking, well, it depends. But what if it was something that was doable? What if it was something that was manageable and it would ensure an entirely different outcome for the state of your life? A positive outcome, a controlled outcome, a relaxed outcome, an empowered outcome. So as many of you know, I struggled with postpartum depression after my second son was born. And to be honest, my life as a mom, as a person, felt like it was spiraling out of control. I ended up in the emergency room and I questioned whether or not I would get out or not. And at that moment, I promised myself that if I did, I would do things differently. And what came as a result of that promise to myself is a morning routine that I call Control Variables. Control Variables is a 5-step program that includes tasks that you need to complete in a condensed period of time. I have created an outline, a PDF download that goes through the entire system and how to implement it in your life that promises, if not guarantees, a better outcome for your day. James Clear, author of Atomic Habits, says, "You do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems." Your goal is your desired outcome. Your system is the collection of daily habits that will get you there. My Control Variables download is the system and the daily habits that have gotten me to the state in which I'm living today. And I'm so proud of the state of my life. So I encourage you to check it out. The download is $25. I have a $5 discount when you use the code CVDiscount. So check in the show notes. Tap the link and you will get the Control Variables PDF download straight to your email. And now one more follow-up question on this topic. Are you doing a combination of video footage with some sort of PDF download? Is that your strategy? So if someone's sitting here listening, thinking, okay, I'm ready to do a course. I have my idea. You know, I generally know what I can talk about. What would be your strategy there in terms of the starter package person who maybe doesn't have the financial resources to get an editor and make it all fancy? What would you say to them?
Here's what I would do. I wouldn't even get on camera, like with a camera. I would just create some slides in Canva or Google Slides. Basically create the notes like you're doing a presentation. And then use a tool like Loom, which is free, to screen record your slides and your webcam. So you're in a little small thing. So you are on camera. They can see your face, but it's just use your webcam and then click through the slides. That way you're looking at the slides yourself and it's reminding you of the notes and you're not even thinking about the camera lens or the people. You're just like explaining the things and just be you and record it. It's free. The slides can be done for free. Loom is free. And then you've got these videos of you walking through the frameworks. And I think that this is me personally. I think slides are helpful because you can be explaining something, but sometimes seeing the words on the screen while someone's explaining it has sink in deeper for me. And it helps me not feel nervous. I'm not like looking at a camera or looking at like a teleprompter. Like people get freaked out when they have to do that kind of thing. So the easiest way in is make some slides. Those act as your notes. Click through a little presentation. And then you get these little mini videos that you can upload to Kajabi or whatever platform. And I think downloadables pair nicely with that. And it can just be, you can download the slides. People can have the slides if they want them in a PDF. You can have a Google Doc that's just like, hey, here's your next action steps after what we learned. Here's a reminder of we talked about this, this, and this. Here's your next step. Call it a worksheet or a downloadable workbook, but it's a nice way for people to watch, download, work through. And you might have just maybe one downloadable for the whole course that has all the modules in it as multiple pages. And it gives them a thing to check through. I just had Jasmine Jante on my podcast. She's like a brilliant course creator for experts. If they don't want to build a course themselves, they want to hire her to like download all their knowledge and expertise and then organize it in a way that makes sense and then help with the course. But she said something that she's been doing for all of her clients' courses is taking the audio from the videos, not just putting it in the course platform like Kajabi, but like creating a private Spotify playlist that they get access to from buying the course so that on their phone in an app they're used to, they can podcast the course without having to log in to this course platform. I thought that was brilliant because some people, again, like to just re-listen to things in the car or whatever. So there's different ways and modes we learn, but it's the same content. You film it once and you can repurpose it into written and audio, and it gives people more ways to interact with you.
Absolutely. And then when you're creating these courses, I think people tend to forget or they get overwhelmed, but that is your content right there. So it's this beautiful circle of, you know, content creation, course creation, back to content creation, you're fine tuning, customer feedback, boom, there's another module in the course that I could add. There's, like you said, you know, another adaptation of, you know, a new course I can do or to create a larger course. And then it keeps working together, which is the wonderful thing about it.
It's very iterative. Yeah, iterative. Like the process is always changing. So you never have to get it right the first time. I'm a big fan of good enough. Like I've never had a perfect course, a perfect video, perfect sales copy. Like it's good enough. Like here's the mental game we're playing as entrepreneurs, even, and this is especially if you're beginning, it's the same. You don't have to be making a lot of money. We're two roles, right? You have the boss hat and then you've got like the employee hat. And the employee hat is the one that's insecure. You want to keep your job. You want to do a good job. You want to please your boss. Like it's very performance driven. And we all know what that looks like. But the boss hat owns the business and just wants results. And so it's like, as long as the money's coming in and our customers are happy, I almost don't care what you're doing at your desk, you know? And you need a balance between those two hats. And I think that gives me a lot of freedom to know, okay, as much as I come from a creative world, like as a musician, my world is all about like the craft and it being amazing and good. And it is a performance. Like I put it out there in the world. What do people think? Do they like it? Do they not? So I have all those insecurities from just the way my world was before I got into business, and business is no different. You're still performing and putting something out there and see if people like it. But I've gained a lot of peace from trying to put on the boss hat, which is pretty like cold in that, like, it's just about the numbers. Do people buy it? Do they like it? Are they getting value? Is money coming in the bank account? And if that's happening, then I test it. I'm like, could I work fewer hours? Could I scale back this launch? Could I do a simpler product and it make the same amount of money? And I'm just testing. And if all the numbers check out, then I'm like, great. I don't have to do as much work. I don't have to worry about it. It's not that I want to do poor work. It's just, I want to know what is the thing that actually makes a difference in my business that people actually care about. Because there's things that I might care about, like the color of the buttons on my website or the logo, but maybe people don't care. And so I just want to find out what those things are. And that's sort of the boss hat that just helps you just remind yourself like, hey, if it's good enough, you know, ship it, get it out there. And if it's serving people, great. Like a quick example, I had a course. It was a $97 course in my music business. It was one of my first hits. It was not shot in HD. It's really great. Like if you blow it up, like people fill up their screen, it's really grainy. It's hard to see. My face isn't anywhere on it. It's just like my voice and some slides and some screen recording. It's not much of a course. And for years, I was like, I need to redo this. This is so bad. I got to redo this. But for 7 years, I kept selling it because it was getting incredible results for people. And I made over $1 million off this little $97 course that I never updated because it just kept working. I was like, why even touch it? So I didn't touch it. It worked. So sometimes good enough is good enough.
You're clearly just knocking it out of the park. So what are, you know, the numbers that someone might want to, I'd say, aspire to when it comes to, and I know each platform is different, right? They say that about TikTok, you know, the Instagram customer I've heard is more valuable than the TikTok customer. And then the YouTube, I'm sure they've got their own metrics because their searchability. Where would those numbers need to be for some reasonable amount, like where someone could go, oh my gosh. And I know it depends on, let's say they have a great course, you know, they show up regularly with their content, they have an engaged audience. Where would those numbers need to be if you're doing it the right way, which you are? Or maybe what is the biggest driver, which I know you're probably going to say your email list, which is what they all say.
Yep.
So that is for the listener, that's what I learned the hard way with years of Instagram, which is the short form content. And I was
which you're crushing, by the way. Like your Instagram's amazing. So here's the thing. All of it has a place, right? But if you're looking at like, here's all the things we could be spending our time doing as an entrepreneur, and I put them in my hands and I've got all these things, TikTok, Instagram, webinars, you know, YouTube. It's so many things, right? So what's fascinating to me is like sift through all of that. And I want to know what actually will put money in my pocket consistently, independently. What matters out of all of that is that you are building an email list. If you look at the data, like even as recently as a year or two ago, email marketing is still the number one driver of sales online, more than social, more than paid ads. It's just the way people are used to interacting. They're used to shopping. When they get an email from Banana Republic, like anybody, any place, Home Depot, doesn't matter. It's not an online business thing. It's any business. Email marketing is what drives people to click and buy more than any other activity. And people check their email every single day. Like more people check their email every day than they do social. Email is something that there's no middleman. So like you could build up, you know, an Instagram following. And I have a client of mine who has 200,000 on Instagram, and then their account just got shut down. And then you can't interact with those people anymore, or the algorithm changes, or everybody leaves Instagram, right, and goes to TikTok until they leave TikTok and go to. So all of that's renting space. Your email list is the only thing you own in terms of being able to communicate with your audience. So like I use YouTube because it's a great platform, but even YouTube could go away. That's why I don't want to build a big YouTube following. Every YouTube video, I'm asking them to get on my email list. I'm not telling them that, but I'm inviting them. That's what my aim is. Every video is like, download my free guide or watch this free workshop, and they have to enter their email address to get that. That's my goal, is to grow the email list. So that's the metric that matters the most.
Sure. Now, I have a question on that topic. Your content is hyper-focused. Can we use me as a case study? Maybe this might help some people. What if your content is not, I wouldn't say my, like I definitely have more like the high-achieving, I'd say primarily stay-at-home mom is my target. But in some instances, that content can become more generic, right? What would be your advice on like niching yourself down and hyper-focusing that content? And it sounds like you've pivoted in some instances where you had Recording Revolution, and now in many ways you're teaching people an entirely different, you know. So like, did you ever think, oh my gosh, will I forsake this audience here? Because now I'm not necessarily talking about music, I'm more talking about the business side. And what was that like? Was it a risk or was it a natural progression? Did you alienate some of your audience? Did you then attract more people? Did it mean more dollar bills? Was that just the journey you were on so you couldn't help but share it? I feel like that's where I am, where people expect this like new motherhood content. And I'm like, I've grown so much. And now it's weird almost to go back, but then that is my target, if that makes sense.
This is a great question. So first my side of it, and then your case study, right? So for me, my thing was really a pivot to a completely different thing. So like I had some press come out on me years ago that they profiled my business, and who's this guy making all this money in this random music space? And that drew some attention from people who didn't care about the music stuff I was teaching, but they were really interested in the business model. Like, how are you doing that? I started coaching people all over the country for free, just sharing like, well, here's what I'm doing. It was fun. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is fun helping people unlock whatever they know, whether it's fitness instruction or teaching French or fixing motorcycles. Like I was coaching people to build content businesses and courses around what they knew. And I was like, man, that's fun. I just would do it for free because it's so fun. And then I got burned out on talking about music recording. And I was like, I'm getting tired of this. And so I had an identity crisis of like, I needed to pivot. And it took me a while. I ran both for a couple of years. And now I still own the music business, but I have some other people doing content for it. And I had to create another business because it's a totally separate audience. I invited my people over to it, but it's not even really related.
Sure.
Yours is still a bit related.
Absolutely. It's just this ever so pivot that some people are like, ah, because you do have to put a stake in the ground when people trust you, when you have a bit of an opinion on, not that we have to, you know, make people upset or anything, but it can get a little touchy in the motherhood. In
oh
any
my gosh,
genre.
Mothers, I mean, I'm married to a mother, and like mothers are very passionate human beings.
Yes.
They've been through a lot, and they're very passionate. But like, here's the thing, right? This is what's so hard about being a content creator and leading an audience of people, is people are looking to you and they have expectations of you. And somebody told me, I got good advice about this years ago when I was feeling this itch to pivot. And I was so afraid to, because what will people think? Well, you're the music guy. You're supposed to keep talking about music. I was like, I don't really want to. And he said, man, what do they tell you on the airplane, in the safety briefing? When the oxygen mask comes down, place it on your face first before assisting others. Why do they do that? Right? Because you can't help anybody if you pass out. You can't help anybody if you burn out. And so it ultimately comes back to service. If you want to serve these people that you feel really excited to serve, these ambitious stay-at-home mothers, however you want to define them, and that's what you're gravitating towards, like if you want to serve anybody, you have to feed your soul in a way of like, this is the stuff that makes me feel alive. And that might mean leaving some people behind, and they will be disappointed, some of them. And others of them will follow you and evolve with you. I've had people graduate beyond me in different businesses because I didn't evolve fast enough for them. So you can either evolve too slow, too fast. It's hard. So just know that it's not about keeping all the people or making them all happy. It's about being really clear on who you feel like you can best serve. And then you said it great, put a stake in the ground and have clear opinions and thoughts and have polarizing content about, I really believe in this and I don't believe in this. And it will alienate by a design certain people, not in a way people do that in a mean way. You don't have to do that, but people will be upset with you. But then it's really about getting more engagement from the right audience who will really connect with you and follow you to the ends of the earth. And then you'll also have a more profitable business because whatever offers you can come up with for those people, that avatar, it's perfect for them and they will buy it. And you'll know what to give them because you care about them so deeply. So as that evolves, I think, yeah, your business is going to continue to evolve. And this is one reason why I stepped out eventually from my first business, even though I was still running both and I could do videos for that brand in my sleep. I just felt disingenuous. And I told my partner, I was like, dude, they love these videos and they love me, but I'm faking it because I don't really love it anymore. And I don't feel I have integrity. Like that word integrity comes from the word integral, like whole. I don't feel whole making these videos anymore because they deserve someone who's excited about what they're excited about. And I'm not excited about that anymore. So it can't be me doing the videos. Either we shut it down or get other people to do it because I can't do this in good conscience. And that's, I think, what it comes down to.
I think that's a wonderful point. And I'm so glad you brought that up. And I think, you know, going back to what I said in the beginning of the conversation and entrepreneurship, especially when you learn it academically, is they leave that out in business school. They leave out the, you know, integrity of the entrepreneur. And I think that's what makes entrepreneurship personally so wonderful, is that you get to feel whole doing what you love to do and you get to bring that to the market. So often people think, well, this is going to make money. This is the gap in the market. And I think you absolutely have to think about that if, you know, you want to be the only one, but you don't have to be the only one. Like you said, you, along with many other people, are doing what you do, but because you have that integrity and the passion and the fire to keep showing up every day, that is what makes you successful. Not because you hit this Steve Jobs, you know, opportunity, like you said. It's like you're making $160,000 a month. I mean, if that's not a life well lived and put together from the standpoint of an entrepreneur, I don't know what is. I think in business school, they miss that, and they mistrain a lot of upcoming entrepreneurs to think, well, if I just can fit this mold, and then they have no heart and passion. And I'm like, that is personally the backbone of the entrepreneur. And what you just said, I think, was a good reminder to me, especially as I, you know, go about my strategy, is just you have to get to the point where you say, I'm not whole doing this. And I have to step into that place where I can, you know, bring the best of me to people so that they get the most value that they deserve. Well, Graham, I am so grateful that you came on the podcast today. You are a wealth of information, and I respect everything that my dad says, shares, and he was clearly impressed by, you know, the article, and I enjoyed reading it as well. And getting to talk to you is just such an honor. So thank you so much. Is there anything that you want to leave my listeners with as we close down the episode? Maybe a piece of advice, you know, a story that has just been pivotal in your successful career, you know, anything that's on your mind as of late?
Oh man, there's so many things. First of all, thanks for having me on. This has been a fun conversation. I would just say you hit it perfectly in this last little thing you said, of which is entrepreneurship is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be fun. And one of my mentors says, like, he only wants to do things that are simple, effortless, and fun in his business. And I think it's a great framework of, like, everything takes work building this kind of business. It's not like it just happens by itself, but you don't have to do the thing that everyone else is doing. You don't have to do what the market says you should do. You don't have to do what, you know, you think is the only way to make money. There are so many ways to make a great living, and more importantly, a great life, showing up fully as who you are. There's never been a better time to be able to just be who you are and build a business around it. So don't be discouraged, and don't go down a path of what will make money. Start with what lights you up and find a way. Does that overlap with what people are willing to pay for? And I bet you it is. And that's what I'm excited about helping people do, because I don't want to build a successful business. I want to build a successful life. And the business is just one part of that. So if I'm not enjoying myself, what am I doing? And that's so, so important to remember.
So true. Well, thank you, Graham. And we'll link all of your information in the show notes. And real fast, where can people find you on YouTube, social media, your Graham Cochran, everywhere pretty much, right?
Yep. Instagram is the only place I hang out online, at the Graham Cochran. And if people want to get a couple of chapters of the book for free, just go to grahamcochran.com/chapters and then get the first two chapters for free.
Perfect. Thanks again, Graham. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Brooke.
I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation. I get so excited when I get guests on and I just want to ask them all these selfish questions, because I admire what they put in the work to create, and to create in such a way that honors themselves. What I love about Graham and I's conversation is that he breaks down those barriers to say, you don't have to do something so over the top that feels out of your wheelhouse. You simply turn your knowledge, passion, and experience into an online income stream in your spare time. Is that a digital course? Is it a digital product? And in his opinion, using a platform like Kajabi is a great place to start. And again, back to the point that he brought home, that entrepreneurship is about serving people, having that others-focused mindset, which I love. Graham was here to show that you can pursue this journey of entrepreneurship and do it in a way that feels like it has integrity, feels like you're coming from a place of fullness, And as you saw with Graham's situation, he had a pivotal moment in his career where he said, you know, I am no longer the music guy. I am the online business coach. And he successfully was able to execute on that. And now the rest is history. He's featured on CNBC, having, you know, now generated $160,000 a month. But to his point, it's not about the money. It's about stepping into the wholeness that is yourself, stepping into the wholeness of adding value to other like-minded people that say, I want to do something like that too. So I hope you enjoyed Graham and I's conversation. I was so excited to have him on today. More than anything, I hope you remember that sometimes you just have to switch out the playbook. Until next time on the At Home Startup Podcast.